Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 258. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how you doing, bud?
I am doing good. Just continuing the off-season grind. The rumors are off all-time high, and everybody's just trying to, it seems like, break news without having actual news, which is a bit annoying, but maybe Yamamoto will sign soon. I'm over it. Just as everybody wants to have that scoop, it seems. But it seems like that could come. He may be signed by the time this publishes in the morning. We'll see. There's a lot floating around, but who knows ultimately. So, yeah, I'm just ready to be done with my team prospect write-ups. I guess I consume my life for 2 months, but yeah, almost done. Almost to the AL West, and then hoping to be done by the end of the month.
I'm hoping that Yamamoto just goes back on it and doesn't sign. Just does all this to get all these free dinners and all that. Just, I'm going to go back to Japan for another year or something like that.
Be something.
But yeah, it feels like that meme with the big jacked up dog and then the little dog. The little dog is the actual action that's happening right now, and the big dog's all the rumors.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Waiting for something big to happen. Just get that next domino to fall, and all these other pitchers will probably sign. But yeah, it's really fun. It's always been weird to me, though, like the whole needing to be first thing on breaking stuff. And then what really makes me laugh is when after the fact, maybe a few hours later, and all these big ones, the Haymans, the Passons, and all of them, Rosenthal's, they'll be like, you know, catching up on credit. This person was first on this. I'm like, why does that matter? I'd rather you be right than try to be first. I know it's a different, that business is a whole different animal. I get it. I can't even imagine being Jeff Passan. Like, when do you sleep?
No.
Or again, the NBA, Adrian Wojnarowski. Like, when do these guys actually sleep? Because heaven forbid something happens at 3 a.m. when they're sleeping and they don't tweet about it for 3 hours. I'm sure they're paid. I know they're paid like incredibly well for what they do, but man, I think that would just be insanely crazy, this job to have.
I don't think it's any different than the fantasy side. Everybody wants to be first on every player. That's
that is true.
It's annoying. Everybody has to be first. We were the first ones in on this player. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah,
all the time. So yeah, everybody wants to get the cred, street cred. But at the end of the day, just be accurate. Just be right. I think that proves your worth. Tangent, but if you're accurate, then it's all that matters.
Absolutely, 100% agree. All right, we're continuing our Dynasty and Prospect Ranking series. Did our second base prospect rankings earlier this week, episode 257. So if you missed that, go back and check that one out. And we'll hit up the Dynasty side here today. This is a very weird position, Chris. I feel like second base got deep for a little bit at the same time when third base was getting really shallow outside of like the top guys. Now that it's shifting again. Third base is getting deeper. Second base gets questionable after the first 10, 15 or so. But let's start off, as we have been with every other episode in the series, with our personal top 10 rankings. Chris, who you got?
All right. It's Mookie Betts, I think, is the clear-cut top guy here. And then followed by Ozzie Albies, Marcus Semien, Jose Altuve, those two old reliables. And then Matt McClain rounds out the five spot. 6 through 10 is Nico Horner, Bryson Stott, Gleyber Torres, Ketel Marte, and Zach Gelof.
All right. So I obviously, Mookie Betts is the unquestioned one. And that's like a cheat code, having Mookie Betts eligible at second base now. And even, you know, if you play in Yahoo or any of the leagues that have 5 or 10 game, you know, eligibility thresholds, he's eligible at short as well, which is just insane. Second base, shortstop, and outfield in some leagues, but in every league, at least outfield and second base. So, yeah, he's no doubt number one. Like, that literally cannot be questioned whatsoever. I also have Ozzie Albies at 2. I have Matt McClain at 3. Semien 4. Altuve 5. Gleyber Torres at 6. Nico Horner 7. Bryson Stott 8. Zach Gelof 9. And Ha-Seong Kim, I combined those two names, at number 10. So let's start with Matt McClain here, Chris. I have him 3. You have him 5. Obviously, one of the bigger breakouts this past year, was really, you know, on a pretty incredible pace for a bit of time there. Then did cool off, had a little bit of the ups and downs, but overall more ups than downs. Became one of the most exciting rookies of this past season in 403 plate appearances, /290, .357, .507, with 16 home runs and 14 steals. So I guess the question is, are we fully buying in what we saw from McClain this past year? And I'm 95% buying in. I don't, even with the Great American Ballpark boost, I don't think he's a 290 hitter. But at the same time, you know, he's always been a bit aggressive, 28.5% K rate, doesn't walk too much, slightly below average contact rates. Contact rates aren't terrible. Chase rate's actually better than league average. Whiff rate slightly below league average, but no real red flags there. But I feel like he's more like 270, 275 range. But I think power, speed, potential 25-20 type of guy, especially in that ballpark, 100% legit. Barrel rate over 10% last year. Hard hit rate 42.5%. Sprint speed 90th percentile. Yeah, I think he's going to be a well-rounded five-category guy. Could, again, put it with 25-25, maybe even 100 runs, 100 RBIs. I think that lineup's going to be really good, especially if Encarnacion Strand, Ellie, and others take a step forward in year two for them. So that could be a really fun lineup, really great ballpark, obviously. So that's why I have him 3rd. I think he really could have a, you know, top 25 season and be in that range next year. But Chris, where are you at on McClain right now? How much are you buying into what we saw this past year?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question to consider, like, how does he potentially fit long term? And can he continue to be a power speed threat? You know, McClain is a unique player in the sense that, you know, he runs elite line drive rates. He hits the ball in the sweet spot, like the ideal launch angles, like 40% of the time. It's like 94th percentile sweet spot percent, which is encouraging, which leads to more barrels naturally. And while,
yep,
you know, he doesn't hit the ball overly hard, those barrels came because of the ideal launch angles. And that's the way it worked out. chase rate is pretty good here with McClain. He doesn't make contact at elite rates, but it's not like it's going to kill you. You know, he ran 28.5% K rate, but I'm actually not sure that he's going to run rates that high moving forward. That'll be something interesting to follow. In AAA this year, he just ran a 20% strikeout rate. But in 2022, in AA, he did run a 28% K rate. He has shown that propensity to run higher K rates in the past. But still, when you look at the overall profile, yeah, maybe McClain overperformed a bit last year. But I still think that this is a 2020 bat that's pretty consistent, at least in that category. I think 270 is probably a fair mark here. I actually got a good question in my Discord the other day about McClain and Zach Geloff. If you like McClain, then why don't you also like Geloff? And I thought it was an interesting comparison, at least to talk about. And I figure we can at least discuss that a little bit. But the power speed with both is really good. But I think there's some other factors to consider with Geloff as to why his value may be a little lower for both of his leagues. He checked in at 9 for you and 10 for me, while McClain was 3 and 5 respectively. So I figure we hit on Geloff because I think the profiles to the young guys fairly similar. But for me, there's one flaw with Geloff that kind of props him a bit. But I don't know if you want to speak to that a little bit.
Oh yeah, no, I think we're syncing up here where we were going with this. Yeah, I think power speed, where they wind up with, you know, with home runs and steals, it's probably going to be in a similar ballpark to each other. So you call that a wash. But what I look at with Zach Geloff is zone contact. Let's just compare the two here. Zone contact goes to McClain by about 7-8%. Whiff rate, Geloff was 33.7%. McClain only 28%. Geloff had a 29% chase rate. McClain 25.5%. Now the contact skills are just better for McClain, and you got to factor in ballpark that each of them play at as well. Obviously, big difference between Oakland and that. Who knows what the dimensions and everything will be like for the new team and for the Athletics when they go to Vegas. But at least for the next, 2 years or 3 years, he's going to be in a pitcher-friendly park. McClain's in the best hitter's park. And then just those contact metrics. I think another comparison, too, that you got me thinking about this, is like Geloff to like Christopher Morel. I think Geloff and Christopher Morel, who I don't think we're even including here, but I think they're really similar, where it's like, all right, pretty good power and speed, but then the contact metrics are all over the place. It make a lot of inconsistencies with their performance. Yeah, I like Geloff a decent amount. I think putting him top 10 says that, and I think he could be a guy that is, again, 25-25 territory, but I think just better lineup, better park, better contact metrics for me gives McClain a decent boost. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, same thing. I think the contact, there's more chase, the lineup in Oakland sucks, and then ultimately the ballpark. And we don't know what the ballpark's going to be like when they move over to Las Vegas, but obviously the AAA park is pretty hitter-friendly there, but the Coliseum's terrible for hitters, so that obviously has a big effect there. Yeah, I just think that ultimately, like, if you put him in the same ballpark, maybe Geloff might play up a bit, like from a power standpoint. But again, they're still very similar profiles minus the contact, which is why I have Geloff a little bit lower.
Yep, 100% agree there. So, and then the other guy in this top five that I think is really interesting to talk about right now is Jose Altuve, who is now 33 years old. See, I had him fifth and you had him fourth. And obviously, I think these top five are pretty set for me. You can 3, 4, 5, you can tinker with that order. But I think there's a little bit of a tier drop off down to the Horners, the Torreses, the Scotts, the Geloffs, and etc. But Altuve obviously is still, like, when he's on the field, is still at least the surface stats are still very good. Over 300 each of the last 2 years, over 380 OBP each of the last 2 years, over 500 slug. Went 17-14 this year in just 410 plate appearances, 28-18 last year in 604. But getting older, durability can be a little bit of a question mark after this past year. And previously, I don't think it's like a major red flag, because before this year, he didn't really have, in 2018, 2019, missed some time, but it wasn't like Buxton levels or Trout levels or anything like that. So, but again, getting older, smaller body, And look at the metrics, Chris, with Altuve, and they're obviously same with Bregman. They haven't had the greatest metrics, but obviously the ballpark, they make it work. But the EVs on Altuve have dropped down to 86 miles an hour. Hard hit rates down to around 30%. Obviously, the approach is phenomenal, but I don't know. I feel like this is going to be a consistent, slow trend down for him in rankings over the next few years.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a decent time to cash out on him.
I think it is, yeah.
Dynasty, a 33-year-old doesn't carry a ton of value, so it makes it really hard to sell. But missed time with injury, 410 plate appearances last year, but still hit 14 or 17 home runs, stole 14 bases while posting a 311 average. So pretty solid. But yeah, you mentioned it. I'm trending the wrong direction with StatCast data, but he's never really been a StatCast darling, which is interesting. His barrel rate last year was actually the highest of his career. That's certainly a positive takeaway. But how does the body age? And that's, I don't know. He's small. He's getting older. These guys typically don't age gracefully. Altuve probably still has some good seasons in him, and I'd expect him to still put up a really solid season in 2024, but I don't know. In Dynasty, I may look to cash out if possible, just because you don't want to sit on these types too long and then they have zero value at all. It puts you in a weird spot. If you're win now, you certainly think he benefits your team. And you may not get what you feel like you're supposed to get in return for an Altuve. But I don't know. I think that there's arguments for keeping Altuve, also arguments for selling him in Dynasty, depending on where you are ultimately.
Yeah, and maybe it's a case where you let him, hopefully he starts the year hot and then you sell in the, May or June or something like that. But yeah, I think it's just going to be a slow decline for him. Like, we're already starting to see it here. Yeah, how much can he stay healthy? He gets to his mid-30s, we'll see. But yeah, it's just obviously still good, still very good player overall. But yeah, I think obviously his best days are behind him. So what, two of the, they're not super young, they're both 26, but two guys I believe we both have back-to-back. Yeah, Nico Hoerner, Bryson Stott. Yeah, you have them 6-7, Hoerner 6, Stott 7. I have them 7-8, same order, Hoerner and then Stott. But pretty interesting profiles in one way or another. Bryson Stott had a very quiet 15-31 year this past year. Also scored 78 runs, slash 280, 329, 419. And then Nico Hoerner, after at a 10-20 year in 2022, followed that up with another 280 plus average and then 9 home runs and 43 steals. Real big uptick there. Solid sprint speed, 80th percentile. But obviously these guys are very close. Do you anticipate them sticking in this range, Chris? Like, I go, this 7 to 10 range is pretty fair for both of them. And I don't know if there's that next gear for them, like to get up into the top 5. Because I think we can work in one of our listener questions to this. It was basically asking, what does Bryson Stott need to do to get top 5? And I think the answer is, like, I don't think he has it in him to get top 5. Like, I like Bryson Stott a good amount. The approach is good, doesn't strike out much at all. Contact rates are very good, above average across the board. Whiff rate's super low. But I think he's just going to what he is. I think 15-30 is very fair in a good lineup, in a good park, hitting 280. I think what he did this past year, pretty fair expectation of what you can expect going forward. But what are your thoughts on these two moving forward, Chris?
Yeah, and so as good as Stott's season was last year, he still checked in is the 11th best second baseman for fantasy purposes on the Razzball Player Rater. So that's notable, at least in my book.
Where was Hoerner?
Hoerner was actually 4. I think the stolen bases just carried him, though. He produced $22 worth of value, and 13 of that was from stolen bases. And then from like a run standpoint, it was like $6. A lot of value was coming just from the stolen bases and the average in runs there. And Stott, a little bit more evenly distributed across the boards, but still a lot of value on his stolen bases as well. So Stott, you look at and you're like, okay, you see the body, you see the swing, and you're like, it feels like there should be more juice here than 15 home run bat that posts below average exit velocities, way below average barrel rate, doesn't hit the ball hard. So those things are concerning, and I think that's the biggest thing hindering him. If Stott becomes a 20 home run bat, and you know, say, oh, it's only five home runs, but it is important to remember, like, he was a compiler last year. Like, yep. He put up 640 plate appearances. He played pretty much every day, put up a ton of plate appearances. So those compilers, it's okay. So what can they ultimately get to? And given the underlying data, I'm not sure we see Stott really become more than what we saw last year. I think that there is the chance that he adds power, but he's got to work on the bat speed. Like a bat speed training is really the only thing you can do at this point as a 26-year-old to really tap into more power. And it's not to say any 26-year-old's a finished product, but if Stott's a 20 home run, 30 stolen base guy that hits 280, then he probably jumps up a little bit. That's a huge value boost. And it seems stupid, five home runs, but it really does make that much of a difference. So that's what Stott has to do, I think. And I'm not sure he does that, actually.
Yeah, and people can really look at the big picture here, or really look at the where these home runs are. Like 15 to 20 is the same as 30 to 40. It's just literally the same percentage jump there. So, yeah, it's only five, but that's still a 33% jump in his home run total. So could he do it? Sure. I don't think – I'm not, like, ruling that out. But, yeah, the fact that he doesn't barrel up very many pitches, 4.5% barrel rate – ground ball rate's a bit higher, not terribly high, but again, I think Stott being where he is fine. I think he's at 6 to 10 range for second baseman, still young and a good lineup, good park. So I think I like him there. Horner, I do have Horner ranked one spot ahead right now. I can see this flipping though. I think there's a better chance of Stott rising than Horner. You know, Nico, obviously elite contact. He's been above a 90% zone contact in 4 of his 5 years. And that other year, he was at 89.2%. Contact rate's been above 80% every year. And the last 2 years, 86.6 and 88.8. Swinging the strike rate's down to 5.1%. Like, obviously, everything about plate discipline is elite for him. Like, he's a 70-grade plate discipline guy. But the power is just not impressive whatsoever. He has 25 barrels in his entire career. Yet 11 and 10 the last 2 years, respectively. But career 2% barrel rate guy. And he's just EV 86.6. It's just not impressive in that regard. But 10 home runs and 30 steals. I don't think he's going to do 40 again. Maybe he will. I don't know. But 10-30 with good amount of runs scored and solid average, I think is fair for him as well. But if I were to kind of bank on one moving up from here, I think it would be Stott for me for sure. All right, Chris, let's go into the next set of our rankings here. Actually, do you want to hit on Gleyber Torres for a second here? Because, yeah, let's hit on Gleyber. Yeah, I kind of see him real quick. But Gleyber, I think back when he was really inconsistent, he was still getting talked about a lot. I think last year was quietly one of his better years, and it's not really getting talked about much at all. Not as much as it probably should. 25 home runs, 13 steals. / 273, 347, 453. That was second outside of that, the huge 2019. That was his best year of his career. I think the metrics here don't wow you to jump off the page, but they're all pretty good across the board. 40% hard hit rate last year, dropped the K rate to a career best 14.5%. Walk rate was 10% on the dot. A lot of good stuff in the profile here. He doesn't whiff too much or chase too much either. So good plate discipline, quality of contact is decent, not great, but I think 25 and 13, that's a pretty damn good year. 90 runs scored as well. It's not getting talked about enough. I wonder why that is, Chris.
People hate Gleyber Torres for some reason, especially like it seems like Yankees fans just like want him traded, and I don't quite understand that.
I'll take him in Boston.
I think he fits well on any team. He's right? So talented. Obviously, that 2019 season forever lives in everybody's heads where he hit 38 home runs. And because he hasn't lived up to that since, then you know, he's a failure per se. But yeah, he was below average in 2020. He wasn't great in 2021. But the last 2 years have been really good. You mentioned 25-13 this year, 24-10 last year. So that's back-to-back 24 home run, 10 stolen base seasons. And in 2022, he had 24 and 572 plate appearances. So that's obviously quite solid. The contact rate improved this year. Like, it's in a really good range, actually. I look at the profile and say, okay, Gleyber Torres is 27 years old. He's consistently improved his chase rate. His own contact rate has flown up each year. The overall contact rate got way better this year. I'm talking like he dropped his whiff rate from 27% in 2022 to 21.8% this year. That's a 5% improvement on contact rate. That's huge. You look, he doesn't smack the ball that hard, but you know, his average EV near 90 miles an hour is above average. The barrel rate's right at league average. Hits the sweet spot quite often. It's just a lot of things. Like, he does a lot of things well.
Yep.
And it's hard to find a ton of flaws in Torres' profile for somebody that seems like that people just hate on so much. He just gets the job done. And I'll take a 25-10 guy with a 270 average all day at second base, especially considering where he's valued. Like, people just tend to ignore him. You have him 6. I have him 8. Is he more valuable than Stott or Horner? I think that's highly possible.
Yeah, you have him above them. I think it's very close. They're all, if you look at my overall rankings here, they're all within 19 spots of each other. So I think it's a little glob in my rankings, and then there's a jump up to Altuve, and then I drop down to the next guys, but to the Gallup and Kims. But yeah, I think he's definitely in that range. In the Dynasty mock draft, actually, Chris, I want to see where he is in your ADP mocks too, because in the industry Dynasty mock we did about a month ago or whatever that was, month and a half maybe, he went 51st overall. He went ahead of Altuve and ahead of Matt McClain. So he was only behind Mookie, Ozzy, and Semien at this in that mock draft. But I'd be interested to see where he is in the ADP mocks that you're going on right now.
Yeah, let me pull that up and see.
I want to see where he went in mine too.
What pick was that you said that he went when he went ahead of Altuve in that industry mock?
He went 51.
51. Yeah. All right. His ADP was right at 95. So he went as high as 70, as low as 110. So, yeah, that's pretty crazy, actually.
I got my draft board up right now, though it's not. Control F isn't working. What do you mean he's not in there? Oh, yeah, there's no first names in this. It's just first initial. That's why I can't buy. I was searching Gleyber. Yeah, Torres went. Not even see it. Where did this is not working. Oh, there he is. 7-3. 15 teams. That's 93. That's great. That's a lot lower than I thought. But yeah, he went for second baseman. He went behind. See, Horner went 5-12. This is 15 teams. Horner went, what's that, 72. Where's McClain in this? I'm not seeing McClain, but yeah, obviously Ozzy, Semien went second round. I'm not seeing Altuve either for whatever reason. But anyway, so he went 93. I think that's fair. But yeah, I think it's weird to say, but I think he might be undervalued by Target right now. Never thought I'd say that about he's always like more on the slightly overrated sell side. But I think perceived value has dropped, even though the last 2 years, even before this year, it wasn't like he was crap. And then this year he turned it on. So he was 24-10 in 2022. So back-to-back years of 20-plus bombs and 10-plus steals. And he's still only 27. Feels like he should be older than that. Still only 27. Yeah, he's not a stud. He's not going to get into that top five. But another guy that I think this 6-10 range just suits him pretty well.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. Let's go to our next set of rankings, 11 through 25 here, but recap real quick. Top 10 for Chris: Mookie, Ozzy, Semien, Altuve, McClain, Horner, Stott, Gleyber Torres, Ketel Marte, Zach Gelof. For me, Mookie, Ozzy, McClain, Semien, Altuve, Gleyber, Horner, Stott, Gelof, and Ha-Seong Kim. My 11 through 25 is Ketel Marte, Colt Keith, Jordan Westberg, Edouard Julian, Matt Shaw, Tommy Edman, Andres Jimenez, who might move up a little bit. I'm having a hard time ranking him. Nolan Gorman, Jonathan India, Brendan Lowe, Luis Arias, Isak Paredes, Thairo Estrada, Miguel Vargas, another one I'm having a hard time ranking these days, and then Luis Angel Acuna at 25. Chris, who are your 11 through 25?
All right. It starts out with Nolan Gorman, then Ha-Seong Kim, Colt Keith, Tommy Edman, and Matt Shaw round out 15. And Jonathan India, Ronnie Mauricio, Brandon Lau, Edward Julian, Thairo Estrada, round out 20. And then the final five of Andres Jimenez, Jordan Westberg, Tamar Johnson, Gavin Lux, and Ryan McMahon.
Let's start with Ketel Marte, Chris, here. You had him 9, I had him 11, so both right around 10. He's an interesting one to rank because obviously he had that big 2019 year and hasn't really come close to that since then until this past year, like with Gleyber, was his second best year of his career overall. Yeah, it wasn't 32 home runs and a 329 average, but slash 276, 358, excuse me, 485 with 94 runs, 25 home runs, 82 RBI, and added 8 steals as well. Is he another guy that could be back in the top 100 now, Chris? Like, are you buying what we saw from him? He is 30 now, which obviously isn't terribly old, and I'm 33. But are you buying what you saw last year and enough to be like, all right, this is another guy that could be top 100 again?
He's back close to the top 100. The biggest concern for me is just injuries, which we've seen in the past. He played pretty much a full season last year, 650 plate appearances. So, yeah, that was the first season that he had eclipsed 600 since 2019, his big breakout season. So the power I believe in, he's always hit the ball hard. That's not a surprise. Average EV this year was 91.1. That's 77th percentile. Doesn't chase, doesn't whiff often. Everything looks pretty solid. I'm just concerned about the durability and what that looks like. He's always run high zone contacts. It's up at 86% this year. Really solid there. The overall contact rate of 80%, really good. Low chase rate, 24.5%. But I think Marte is just who he's always been. That's who we saw. But he stayed healthy. And can he stay healthy in 2024? And I think that's really the question that needs to be answered.
Yeah, because you look at the metrics, and it wasn't like there was a huge improvement anywhere in the metrics last year. Oh, that's why he broke out again, so to speak. No, he, again, like you mentioned, he just stayed healthy, something that he's had a really hard time of doing in his career, especially since that big year. It was over the, 137 games last year, 90 in 2021, 45 in the short in 2020, which is three quarters of that year. So he hadn't played above 140 since 2019, but last 2 years, 137 and 150. So maybe, hopefully, he's putting all that behind him, because the metrics were still pretty good across the board. And again, pretty consistent with previous years, above a 90 mile an hour EV each of the last 3 years. His barrel rate's around 8% or so, hard hit rate over 40% each of the last 5 years, along with that good, you know, approach that you touched on. Yeah, I think, again, another guy that's pretty, I think he's probably not, I don't, would you put him in the same tier as like Nico and Stott? I feel like he's, just because of the age and the durability concerns, maybe he's a slight tier below for me.
Yeah, I think he has to be a tier down just because of the injury concerns there. Yeah. So while I like him, I think that it's fair to say he's a step below those guys.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I got some young guys in this range here that, you know, we have some differing rankings on, but I want to touch on like Nolan Gorman. I've got Jordan Westberg, Edward Julian. So these three, I have Westberg 13, I have Julian 14, and Gorman 18. Chris has Gorman 11, and Julian 19, and Westberg 22. So you have Gorman actually a good chunk ahead of these other two guys. Obviously, Gorman's had a lot of highs, a lot of lows already in his career, and somewhere, you know, in the minor leagues as well. What are you seeing from Gorman that made you put him 11th in your rankings here, Chris?
Maybe a touch high on him. I feel like when I update like the overall dynasty rankings, he probably drops down a bit. There's no denying the power. Like, we know that that's the major carrying tool here. Talking about elite barrel rates, near 17% last year, which was 97th percentile. It's the ball at great angles, so that's obviously going to allow him to, the power to play up. It's a weird profile because he takes walks. Like, he doesn't chase often, but he also doesn't make contact all that often either. The zone contact rate, it's a little scary at 72%, and the overall contact rate at 65%. Not great either, but there everything else looks really good. Gorman's going to play down in an average league. He's going to play up in an OBP league. Even still, the OBP, not going to be great considering how low the average is, but we're looking at like a 100 point, or I guess a 0.1 jump. So like he went from a 236 average to 328 OBP. I think there's 40 home runs in the bat. I think that's more than capable of that. He's 23. Can he make more contact? I think so. I think he's more than capable of it. If the K rate drops from 32% down to 28%, then all of a sudden, I think Gorman's going to be jumping up like to be a top 75 player pretty quickly. So there's certainly potential here. He's got to improve against breaking balls. That's really the biggest flaw. Mashed fastballs quite well, but the breaking ball issue was certainly there. So I don't know. I think that the Cardinals seem like they're invested in Gorman, and the power just does it for me, especially if you're in the OBP league where he doesn't really hurt you like he would in an average league.
Yeah, so I guess I echo a lot of what you just said. I'm just less confident that he can improve a ton in the contact department. You know, do I think he can improve? Sure. I don't think he's going to be stuck down in the 220 range forever, but if he does improve, what does that look like? Is it 240, 250? And I think 260 is pretty high and a low likelihood outcome. But even the 240 range with 25, 30 home runs, maybe 35, like you said, he could be a guy that flirts with top 10 for me. I'm just very concerned with the contact rates, the chase rates, the whiff rates, I meant to say, the strikeout rates. They've been pretty bad for two straight years now. Power is great, no doubt about it. But I think that was my concern, is I don't have a lot of confidence that he makes at least sizable improvements, maybe marginal improvements, but not sizable. But then it's not the other two guys aren't, you know, don't have their flaws either. I think maybe the safest guy might be Jordan Westberg, because Julian has a very interesting profile as well. Obviously, super high OBP. He's always been that guy. We joke about him taking a walk in the home run derby in the Arizona Fall League, but hard hit rate 45%, barrel rate 13%, walk rate tick under 16% overall. But at the same time, strikeout rate was 31.4%. And there is platoon concerns here for him, because they really hit him against lefties. He only had 48 plate appearances against lefties, 360 versus righties, slash 196, 229, 217 against lefties. Only one extra base hit. That was a double. Is he a guy that's going to be able to play enough? Or is he a guy that's going to be in that 475 to 525 plate appearance range as a strong side platoon guy that never really gets the 600 plus? I think that's a legit question here. So he's a guy that could tick up for me too. If he can improve against lefties, that's like the big thing. Could cut down the K rate overall. I think Julian's got some potential to jump up here, especially in OBP formats for sure. Like, this could be a 400 OBP guy if he improves against lefties. But Westberg, I think he might not have the highest. He might be the lowest upside of the three. He does feel the safest. Not a profile that wows you. It's like more of a sum of the parts guy. Solid across the board. 80th percentile sprint speed. Barrel rate was 6.5%. Hard hit rate 44.5%. But maybe he's a guy, if he gets the playing time. We talked about that last episode about the log jam in this infield in Baltimore. But maybe he gets traded. But full season, he's a guy I think that could flirt with 2020 and maybe even get there eventually. So I think he's the safest. That's why I buy into him a little bit more. But what are your thoughts on these other two, Chris, with Westberg and Julian when compared to Nolan Gorman?
Yeah, Julian is pretty interesting. Obviously, the OBP aspect is elite, so really going to play up there. It wouldn't surprise me to see him have seasons where he posts 400 OBPs, because the walk rates are elite. It's so good. But I will say, swing and miss was there. Like, obviously not to the level of Gorman. There's some serious issues against breaking balls where Julian got exploited, hit fastballs really well, like 80% contact against fastballs. And then against breaking balls, 55% contact. Like that is pretty scary. The zone contact rate is well below average with Julian. The overall contact set around 70% as well. But like, does he just continually get more breaking balls? Does that usage just go up over time because people have something out for him? I'm actually curious to see. I'm going to break this down by month and see if he begins to see more breaking balls. Oddly enough, like throughout the season, he got more fastballs, which he hit well, instead of breaking balls, which he really struggled with. I think there's holes in this game that still give me pause. And Westbrook, the pause with Westbrook is like, does he play? Like, where does he find the playing time? I don't know. I think that Westbrook's a legit player. He does a lot of things well. He's not going to be a stud in any one area, but he's above average across the board. When we're looking at skill sets, who hits a lot of line drives, can hit the ball hard, and can make things happen on the base pass on occasion. But what's the fit here? Is he just a super utility guy? I don't know. Maybe he's traded. Maybe the best case scenario for Jordan Westbrook. But, you know, right now, like, I feel like Westbrook's floor is probably the safest of these guys. But the playing time concern is the big thing. We know that ultimately Gorman's going to get his at-bats because he's a masher. And there's nobody really to take a spot right now. These other guys, I think, still have question marks that need to be answered as well for me.
Yeah. And again, I'll take Westbrook on the Red Sox. All these second basemen, I'll take them on the Red Sox in a heartbeat. Let's drop down a bit further down our rankings here. In Jonathan India and Brandon Lau. Chris, if I said that you had to buy low on one of these two guys in Dynasty Leagues, which one would you look to buy low on right now? I know that's a tough one. Like, and you know, different reasons. Both have injury, pretty big injury concerns there. More so for Lau, I think, than India. But you know, India has at least been above 430 plate appearances each of the last 3 years. While Lau went from 615 to 266 to 436. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to buy low on either of these two. But I guess for me, I'd say India. But I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah, Lau, I guess he still has the power. Got that going for him at least. India, do the Reds believe in him? I don't know. Like, they want to, seems like they just want to ship him out, want to move him over to first base. Like, it's weird stuff. India's profile certainly plays better in the OBP format, but like, if he got traded, what's that profile look like outside of Great American Ballpark?
Right.
He's got minimal power, so that brings up some questions too, honestly.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And I do think he's going to get traded. I think the one that does get shipped out of town is Jonathan India. And I'd say that's probably, I'll put it at 70%. Like, I feel pretty highly that he's going to get traded probably for pitching. And that will definitely help that log jam clear up in that Cincinnati infield. And you know, especially with the addition of Jaime Candelario, who probably plays first base, and then McLean at second, Elliott short, Nolby at third, and Anka DHing. So I think India is the guy that gets dealt. And where does he get dealt to? Is it to, I don't know, Kansas City, where it's a bad hitter's park? I think that the destination will really play into his value here. But I don't really want to buy on either of them, but I guess I would lean India here. Let's see, last name here before we get into our listener questions here. Andres Jimenez, so I mentioned back when we were listing our rankings, is a guy that's a tough one to rank for me. He did have a 15-30 season, which is basically, again, what Bryce's Stott did. Slash line, obviously, was much lower than Stott's. 251, 314, 399 slash lines, which obviously is not very good at all. You look at his Savant page, which, again, isn't everything, but obviously good defender, no doubt about that, and 93rd percentile sprint speed and doesn't strike out too much at all. K rate down to 18.2%, but doesn't walk much. The quality of contact is very underwhelming, 27% hard hit rate, average EV of 84.8, which I'm sure had to have been. You think this bottom five in the league, Chris, that had to have been like bottom five or bottom 10 here.
Oh, yeah.
But let's see. That was
worst 10
for qualified guys. Yeah, third worst. Chris, take a guess who the two qualified hitters below him were.
Estery Ruiz.
Yep. I knew you'd get Ruiz.
Yeah.
Ruiz, I mean, he was lowest by 2 miles an hour.
Yeah, and that one's not particularly close. I only know that because our good friend Jacob Marcy also fits in that area, and I've tried to warn people about that. The other one, gosh, I know I've looked at this, 84-8 something. I don't know why I remember that number. Maybe I'm way off.
Jimenez is 80. This guy in second is 84-6.
Okay.
Former Rays prospect, played in Australia for a little bit.
Jake Fraley.
There you go. Yep. Fraley second. And then the rest of the top 10, just for anybody that cares, Whit Merrifield, John Berardi, Bryce Turang, Paul DeJong, Geraldo Perdomo, Will Brennan, and Adam Frazier. So not a great list to be a part of. And Thairo Estrada, who's on our rankings here, was 12th lowest. But
yeah.
And Altuve was 17th worst. Ha-Sung Kim, 18th worst. Okay, I'm done. But anyway, but yeah, just goes to show, like, the quality of contact, not good, but runs well. He's going to stay in the lineup, obviously, and play a ton because the defense is so good. But I don't know, like, we both have him pretty low for a 15-30 guy that also went 17-20 last year. I feel like we both have him. I think people are probably going to think this is pretty low. I have him 17, and you have him 21. I don't know. What kind of goes into your ranking there? Because he was a hard one for me to rank. Because obviously, we play the surface stats are what counts for fantasy. That's what the roto stats, that's what counts. But the metrics are just very underwhelmed.
Yeah, he's a really tough one. I've struggled with several of these guys, like this kind of similar profile, as far as what is that? I know it, obviously you mentioned the numbers and that's what matters, but is that output going to continue? Can that success continue with this kind of profile? And I'm not sure that's the case. We already saw some regression, I feel like, with Jimenez, but I know he rebounded second half, still 15-30 is great. Like, we can't argue that. But you look across the board, and everything's just not good. Even the strikeout rate does not line up with anything else in the profile. Like, he had a good strikeout rate at 18%, but nothing in the profile suggests that he should be at 18%. I mean, he chases 40% of pitches outside the zone. His zone contact rate is like the only decent thing in the profile. It's at 80%. And that's still below average. It's not great. The whiff rate, overall contact, 75%. Like, it's fine. But, like, these things don't indicate someone that doesn't strike out at all. And then you throw in the fact that the quality of contact's so poor. I don't know. I know he's young. Like, he's 25, but he's a smaller frame. I'm just not really into Andrés Giménez. I wonder if I'm... I'm 21. I think that's a fair spot. Like, and that's weird to say, but I'm just not overly high on him at all at this point.
Yeah, and maybe it is harsh to put him below guys that have a lot of... Like the two guys we just talked about. Should he be ranked lower than India and Brendan Lau? The metrics are better for those two for the most part, especially with the bat, but he plays, and he's actually putting up stats right now. I don't know. I got to look into his ranking again. It's tough because, again, I've never been a huge guy in Jimenez, and I was preaching so high last year, but I think maybe I'm a little too low. I wouldn't move him up too much. It would only be a couple spots if I did, but all right. Let's start running up the show here with some listener questions here from the old Twittersphere or X-sphere, whatever we want to call it these days. We had about a dozen questions, some of which we probably already touched on, so but we'll go through them now. Yeah, there's that one about Bryson Stott, what he needs to do to be a top five guy. This one's about Gavin Lux. Charlie says, I'm still holding Gavin Lux in dynasty leagues. Feel like he still has a chance to give what Bryson Stott and or Jimenez gave last year. I don't know, Chris. Gavin Lux, obviously, we've talked with him a lot on this podcast, being a top prospect that had a hard time breaking in with the Dodgers for a while. Started doing well in 2022 and then missed off 2023. I don't know. I'm not really in on Gavin Lux. Like, maybe he's a guy that gets into the top 20 in that 15 to 20 range. But Chris, do you see him rising higher than that? The approach is good. Right around 10% walk rate, 20% K rate. That's good. And I think maybe he can be like a 15-15 guy, but I just don't see like a lot of upside past that.
Yeah, he's interesting. Like, he is one that I wish we had seen in 2023. Obviously, missed the entire year. But he was a big bat speed gainer, still has good sprint speed, doesn't chase, like a pretty good approach, good contact. I've held on to Lux. Like, I had him top 25, barely. The Dodgers have said he's going to be an everyday guy this year. I think he has to prove something this year. I think there's 20 home run potential. And I think you're right, probably 15 stolen bases, like decent OBP. But I will say Lux has yet to post a slug over 400 in his career, which is pretty wild to look at and see.
I was just looking at that too. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, as a career 383 slug and 1,000 plate appearances. That's not great. I don't know. I like Lux. I want to see what he does, but I'm not like heavily investing.
I want to see him trim that ground ball too. He's been like 47 to 50% each of the last 3 years. So I want to see him trim that. But yeah, I think he's a good buy right now. But I don't see him top 10. Maybe he gets to the top 15, but I just don't see top 10. I still think that level of upside is there. Next question here from Ryan Kenny. I've got a stable of Tyler Black, Thomas Adjaye, Aranda, Amador, and Westbrook with no current major league options. Aside from Amador, who would be your bet for most at-bats next year? I actually don't even think it's Amador, to be honest with you. No. I think maybe he gets a cup of coffee late in the year, and maybe more if he didn't miss time this past year, but he missed half the season in the middle. I think Black gets a good amount of run, but at more so at third base. I say I'll just throw some plate appearance numbers here. I'll say Black gets 50 plate appearances to Jay-Z, a little bit less than that. Aranda, I literally have no idea. Aranda, Amador below 100. Westberg the most at, let's say, it's hard to say. Right now, I'll say 400. And if he gets traded, maybe 600. So I'll say Westberg and then Black are my top two there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that Black, the Brewers are just completely selling off. So it seems like the Black may get some serious run. And I don't know exactly what kind of production that we see out of him, but he's probably going to get plenty of playing time, I'll say. So JC, I'm not sure how much we see of him. Aranda, if he gets traded, could play. He can get 600 plate appearances. He's certainly ready for that. And then probably Westberg, I would say, I'm comfortable saying he gets the most.
Yeah, that was a pretty easy Westberg for me. Next one here, Blue Jays 27 asks, best second baseman to buy low after a down year in 2023. I will say I'm just going to buy low on – no one really stands out for me. But I'll say – I think maybe – I don't know. I don't know if this really fits, but maybe Jordan Westberg. I think the people weren't really impressed with the debut, so I think his perceived value has dropped a little bit. So I guess I'll say Jordan Westberg here. But there's not like a real standout answer, for at least for me.
I guess I'd pick Lux. Just to see where it goes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe Miguel Vargas. I don't know. Is he even a second baseman? We're talking about him on this episode. I don't know.
Who knows with him at this point?
Yeah. Ronnie Mauricio, he's hurt. He's going to be out for the year, so I wouldn't buy it. I actually told people not to buy yet. I'd wait till it's like a couple months from now, and I think his value probably just dips even lower because the out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just Lux. I'll just go with Lux, honestly. Westberg's a good one as well.
So the next one here is a few questions in one, so we'll hit them quickly. Kettle Marte, sell high. Maybe a little. We mentioned the durability concerns, but I wouldn't be like rushing to sell. But if I get a good offer, I wouldn't be opposed selling.
Yeah, he's fine. Like, you can sell if you get the right offer.
Yep. Second question from Buck. Mookie Betts, full-time second baseman for long-term? It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Could he? Absolutely. I think Mookie Betts is one of the three best athletes in baseball and probably one of the three best athletes I've seen in baseball in my entire lifetime. I know I'm not like, I'm only 33, but Mookie's just a phenomenal athlete and everyone knows that. He can dunk a basketball. He can bowl 300. He's just a super great athlete. So wherever you could put him at catcher, I think he'd figure it out. That's the type of guy he is. Could he? Yes. Will he? Who knows? I don't know. But I think for now, obviously he'll have it this year and he'll carry it over into next year. So you'll have him for at least the next 2 years with eligibility.
Yeah, he's, like you said, two more years at minimum. I don't know. It's hard to predict that, but yeah, at least you got him for 2 years.
And the last one from Buck, Semien and Altuve, who has a higher value for the next 3-4 years? I will pretty comfortably say Semien, just because he plays like he is the most durable guy in baseball right now. And I say that he's going to blow out his knee. I'm sorry if he does, but he's been over 700 plate appearances like forever now. So yeah, I'll go Semien for sure.
Yeah, I'd say Semien as well.
Next one from Brian Wolf. Does Carlos Jorge from the Reds have a shot at 2025 Red second base, or is that most likely somebody else? I think it's too early to answer that question. Yeah, it's next year, but there's already a logjam ahead of him. We have to see if someone gets traded. Jorge has played a little bit at other spots as well, mostly at second base. Maybe he gets traded. I don't know. I think it's just too early to tell for Carlos Jorge, just given all the options they already have in this infield.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a limit. I'm just not in on Carlos Jorge at all. He's power's like 20 to 30 grade. Like the exit velocities are not good at all. He swings at 70% of pitches, like hyper aggressive chases, doesn't make enough contact. Like, I just think he's like a speed guy. And I don't know. I don't really see him being like a stud that like you want to invest in personally.
Yeah, so, there was hopes that that power would take a step forward this year, but it just didn't. So, yeah, he's a kind of a weird guy rough right now. A couple of David Schneider questions here. One, is David Schneider the Blue Jays opening day starter? Can he perform the way he did at end of year? And the other one just says thoughts on David Schneider. He feels like a huge sleeper this year. I don't know if I'd say he's weird. So obviously, he was like Babe Ruth for 3 weeks and then fell off a cliff entirely. Overall, 276, 404, 603 slash line, 8 home runs and 141 plate appearances, but did strike barrel rate 18%, hard hit rate 38%, K rate 30.5%, walk rate right around 15%. I mean, is he the Blue Jays? Probably. I'm trying to see, unless I'm forgetting somebody, he should be there opening the second baseman. Yeah, that's how Roster Resource has him as well. Probably, and he's probably a hit. I don't know, fifth, sixth, probably. Obviously, not hitting in the top three with Springer, Bo, and Vlad. And he's not really a cleanup guy. So fifth or sixth, probably. I think there's some sneaky value there. Maybe I have him ranked too low. Maybe he's a guy that should have at least been in my top 25. But I don't know. He's hard for me to rank, Chris. Where are you at on Schneider?
I just look at the September. He was, like you said, Superman for a month. But his September was awful. He struck out 33% of the time, hit 174. Had just 2 home runs. I think that a lot of people are overrating David Schneider, and myself included. Like, I've corrected that, but I think he's fine. Like, he's a fine player, but I'm not sure I'm willing to invest in him personally.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you. Matt Haas asks, is a 2020 season a reasonable expectation for Zach Eloff? I think we already answered that, yes. Maybe the average is a bit lower, but yeah, 2020 is definitely in there. How high from Archer Dominguez? How high would you rank Edward Julian at OBP, and what might his ceiling as a hitter look like? Mary touched on him. OBP for this position, like if these were OBP, see, I have him 14th here in average. He'd probably be 11th or 12th in OBP for me. So not top 10 yet, but I think the ceiling is that he could push 30 home runs with a 400 OBP if he can avoid being a strong side platoon player. But yeah, a couple spots up for sure in OBP formats.
Yeah, 100% agree with you there.
All right, so we got, oh, that's it. The last one is also about Julian. So Chris, would you say Edward Julian is a top 20 second baseman in 2024? That is what Blue Jays 27 asks.
Does he play enough? I think that's the question. I would say, yeah, I think there's the potential for that, but he's going to have to get enough reps. And right now he's penciling at DH. A lot of guys vying for that DH spot in Minnesota. So if he leads off like Roster Resource has him, yeah, I think there's that chance that he is.
Yeah. I think he'll probably lead off at least against righties. I'm trying to pull up his real quick before we get out of here, his ADP. So in NFBC draft champion draft since November 1st, and which has been 34, he is 18th highest ADP among this position, going right around pick 200, right behind Gorman and India, and right ahead of McMahon, Brendan Drury, and Whit Merrifield. Yeah, I think top 20 range is fair. Maybe even top 15, top 12, if he can play enough to get enough playing time there. But yeah, I think this will wrap us up. Really interesting position. While it is down a bit, there's a lot of interesting names, a lot of like decisive names here that are really fun to talk about. So this was a good episode, a fun one to record. Hope everyone enjoyed it. We're taking a break from these rankings for next week because it's Christmas week. We'll have one episode next week on a different topic, and then we'll hop back in the week after Christmas with our back to third base and shortstop the week after that. We've got some guests lined up for some of those episodes. And of course, check us out on Twitter, EricRoss04, Roto Clegg, Toolshed Pod. Check out Rate and Review, check out our personal sites, all that good stuff. And we will see you next time. But until then, everyone take care.